The audacity of this pitch.
The audacity of this pitch has been brought to you by Diversify IT.
Welcome back. This is the second part of our two-part episode about revolutionary anthems. We hope you enjoy. Which brings me to the next song, Police State by Pussy Riot. Now, upon listening to this song initially, it does not seem like a call to action. However, I feel much like the Gil Scott-Heron song, The Revolution Will Not Be Televised. This song is less about a call to action, more of a call to awareness of the environment that we're allowing to become normalized. I want to read this part from Police State. No problems in paradise will lock them up. We all got to sacrifice. It won't be long. Shut the borders, burn the other, sons and daughters, and the mothers. Drink the Kool-Aid. It's a new way. Do what I say. Oh my God, I'm so happy I could die. Oh my God, I'm so happy I could cry. Oh my God, I'm so happy I could die. Everybody's doing the same thing, and it makes me happy, yeah. And it makes me happy, yeah. And then refrain. We lock them up. We all gotta sacrifice. It won't be long. Shut the borders, perfect order. Sons and daughters, help the martyrs. Drink the Kool-Aid, it's a new way. Do what I say. Oh my God, I'm so happy I could die. Oh my God, I'm so happy I could cry. Oh my God, everybody's on the same thing. It makes me happier, makes me happier. Oh my God, everybody's on the same thing. It makes me happier, makes me happier. So basically, well, first of all, this is your first exposure to what? To Pussy Riot altogether or just this song?
Pussy Riot altogether.
Okay, all right, all right.
I can't believe I listened to the song, obviously, in advance of the recording, but...
Quite frankly, them being out of Russia, I am really surprised they survived this long. Like, it's... I mean, they have been imprisoned. It almost makes me wonder if, like, you know, Putin is like, okay, I'm going to let these people... like, do their own thing to give the illusion of hope. You can't have complete hell without some kind of hope. So if I let them, you know, say whatever they want to say about me or whatever, I look like a benevolent king. But they have, not just talking about authoritarianism in Russia, but around the world. So this is a great song for you to be introduced to, for you to be introduced to them.
Oh, yeah.
Through. But yeah, so what did you take from it? What did you, whenever you heard it, for the first time?
Some of it's the disjuncture between the almost happiness of the way she's singing and some of the brutal lines. I mean, I'm your trophy, make my nose bleed, now you own me. I mean, it's, I love that disjuncture. I mean, I was listening earlier this week to Mississippi Goddamn by Nina Simone, and just the way they recorded back then, her voice certainly gets more and more angry as you go through, but the backing music is makes you think of a very, very different message early on. And like I said, I only got to listen to this once or twice, but I'm going to listen to a lot more.
It's deceptive in regard to its, I mean, it's got this bubblegum pop nature to it, but then only whenever you actually like start to read the lyrics and like hear what they're talking about, do you recognize that like this is a dystopian anthem that's disguised as, you know, bubblegum pop, which makes it, you know, ingenious in regard to being a protest song behind enemy lines. So unless I'm sitting here, listen, it's not in your face like that, like Zach, you know, from Rage Against the Machine. Like, if you listen to this, you heard it on the radio or whatever, you'd be like, oh, this is a cool little tune or whatever, until, like, you know, you dig beneath the surface. Which, you know, makes me wonder, you know, if that subversive nature can be found here somewhere. if there's an artist here that is subliminally, you know, letting people know, you know, things are not as good as we would think they would be. I mean, there are some artists like Billie Eilish, for instance, you know, who sings about dark topics. But normally if you start talking about, like, you know, politics or darkness or evil, it's always just like this vague reference to things, almost an abstract, where in the Pussy Riot song, we're talking about something very, very direct, very, very explicit. And I'm wondering whether that's another roadblock too, whether that fear of persecution by being explicit here deters people from being more outspoken and direct in regard to their messaging.
I don't have one in mind, but I'll assure you I'm going to go out and look for, because I know there's songs I've listened to where is that overly happy, almost sappy type of music, mm-hmm. and either a sad or much more meaningful message underlying it. So it's part of what I'm going to, I mean, probably be a future podcast, we hope. But I, like I said, I love that sort of almost intellectual, because that's intellectually subversive, mm-hmm. Appeals to me. I guess I wish I was a little bit more subversive, but so I'll be looking for something that I can find for the podcast.
I mean, there's, like, all the songs from rappers.
They're all, yeah.
From all of the, because for a while, it could just be me, but wasn't all rap the protest music?
There was.
Right, for a long time.
That's a whole, and we're going to,
we're going to get there.
We're going to do one of that. We are with you there. Go ahead.
Right,
go ahead.
But it's the shake again.
Yeah.
That mm-hmm. the call to awareness you brought up earlier is the shake, where it's like, if I say it in this way, if I say it in this tone, and if I lighten it and I put bubbles and questions at the end of my comments, you'll listen and you'll think I'm safe and you'll hear that I'm really bleeding and bruised, and maybe you'll do something about it. And eventually, like Nina Simone, eventually you'll see how angry I am, you'll see how hurt I am, mm-hmm. and whether you do something or not, you're going to hear this thing. Like, it, sometimes the shake gets more and more violent and more aggressive. But I think what got a lot of people is the gentle start. Mm-hmm. So the tone of the song at the beginning was like, oh, this is, I can groove. Oh, okay. Oh, wait a second. Oh, wait. Oh. And then now I can't not listen to it because I'm responsible now. And mm-hmm. I think I'm a good person, so I must now continue to play the song and promote it and maybe do something. So it's all about the shaking the tree.
Well, and the shaking is involving, the shaking is necessary because you're mm-hmm. trying to, what, wake people up, right? Mm-hmm. You make people aware of the environment that they're in, what they're going through, that you're in danger. And so, yeah, it starts off like a shake, like, you know, just like your alarm goes off in the morning, but if it's a fire alarm, it's going to go off with a certain kind of klaxon. And so one thing that I wanted to talk about in regard to Pussy Riot song is that by using this backdrop of, like I said, bubblegum pop, for lack of a better term, they're making a reference to the banality of evil, you know, that, you know, this song can play in the background of your life because, you know, it just blends in with everything. It doesn't stand out to you until you look at it closely. Making people aware is one of the first actions that has to take place before there is any kind of change. Making people to recognize that, hey, things around you aren't how they should be, or how they could be, is the first step. Laura's like, yeah, exactly.
How do you get the confirmation that they heard it? How do we know they are aware?
Gotcha.
Well, it's woken me up. I'm sitting here thinking, I mean, the beauty of this song is it works on so many levels. Like, you think about countries like Russia, mm-hmm. North Korea, mm-hmm. the only messages that get out are positive, and mm-hmm. at least the endorsed messages from the state. So this very, very happy bubblegum pop
seems like it is.
It's just like, hey, mm-hmm. this is propaganda, but if you dig into the words here, this is the reality. So it's...
It's propaganda disguised as propaganda.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I mean, it's, so I didn't realize when I listened that they were from Russia. I hadn't... You know, you talked about homework. Obviously, I didn't do my homework for this episode, but that, I think that helped because it's making that even more powerful. So it's opened my eyes.
Revelations in real time.
I'm going to go listen to a whole heck of a lot more and dig into this song. So, I mean, that's brilliant in how you wrap it in so many layers and taking the time to unpack it, which I think is one of the things that's the risk there, is a lot of people are just going to listen to the beat and the bubblegum sound. That's a great song. You start listening and reading the words and understanding what they mean.
And then if you're persecuted by the state, you can say, you know, but what's, I mean, this is what you want us, I mean, this is what you want us to do, right? You right. want us to go around and pretend like everything's okay
right.
and make these pop songs for, you know, for people to dance to. And if you listen to lyrics, like, you know, are we lying here? This right. is the truth.
Yeah.
This is what's happening. So I can see how this can be the thorn in the side of, you know, establishment advocates who are basically saying, you know, pretend like everything's okay, but at the same time, accept the fact that everything is not okay.
Yeah.
Or us normalizing that.
Yeah, normalizing.
Bonus one. So, whenever we started down the path and we were talking about Matthew Grimm and Woody Guthrie's 33rd Resolution, I mean, I'd heard a lot of Woody Guthrie songs, right? I had not heard that one. And I looked up the resolution, and I looked up, I mean, I went through line by line, and it's that, and like some were vague, but some were very, very, very specific. But I stumbled upon Wilco and Billy Bragg's All You Fascists, which was a song that Woody Guthrie wrote, but he never recorded. And his daughter commissioned the creation of this whole album.
I'm gonna tell all you fascists, you may be surprised. People all over this world are getting organized to fight to lose. You fascists are bound to lose. Race hatred cannot stop us, this one.
And the song is not on the album. I saw it performed live, but it was a song that Woody Guthrie wrote. And one thing that I wanted to, like, you know, talk about in regard to how and where we have stopped, or why there's not that much of a political message in regard to contemporary artists, is, you know, the picking up the torch or the passing of the torch. Right, where you had, and we talk about this. We'll talk about this a little bit when it comes to you know, rap music and how rap was very, very political in the 70s and 80s, and then suddenly stopped because there was a break between those artists who were socially conscious and the more commercial artists that were coming up after them. There was no recognition. There was actually some infighting. Like when Lil' Kim came and rose to, you know, a position of prominence in the late 90s and whatnot, there was a lot of talk about the fact that she was, you know, not acknowledging, you know, those who came before her, like MC Light and Queen Latifah, right, who came from that politically conscious, respect yourself era. Lil' Kim was all about get money.
Any way you can.
Any way you can, right? And so those two ideologies, it was a different interpretation of women's empowerment. That was the argument for, you know, how she was representing, even though she was conforming to, you know, the male gaze and subject to, you know, this male dominated label that she was on and whatnot. But there was no no passing of the torch from those who came before her to her. And I'm wondering if that's part of what we're dealing with right now is, like, you know, we don't have, you know, that kind of mentorship from, you know, your previous politically active artists of these contemporary artists.
Right. Well, and you get bands like, you know, more in the alternative rock space, you know, something like Green Day's American Idiot, mm-hmm. Which we played again for our previous president. and, you know, but it is all about the money and mm-hmm. the struggle to stay on the label. And if you're not on the label, they're going to drop you. So American Day happened to be a big album for them. And I know from trying to listen to some of the other stuff, they tried to replicate it and never quite hit again. Mm-hmm. So it's sometimes just of the moment type of protests. But we don't have bands that are known for protest music, at least not the more popular ones. Mm-hmm. You do have folks like Matthew Grimm, that's pretty much all he does. Mm-hmm. But I think he's mostly self-publishing and hopes that folks like me continue to listen. And like I said, I did reach out and hope that at some point we can get someone like him on this podcast to get insight into what the music industry's like, because I'm not a part of it. But something is driving people away mm-hmm. from these more politically inspired songs. And in one of our next podcasts, we have a great piece, an artist that I listen to much more close to country and Appalachia type of music, recorded a video in advance of one of his songs, basically explaining why he did it, you know. And so, you know, he was getting backlash. You can read that through what he's saying in that video. So I think there's some of that as well. So yeah, I don't know. I said it earlier already, but with everything going on right now, we're screaming for political protest songs, right? You know.
Yeah, I mean, it's nonsensical. I mean, like, I and some people will say it's relative, like, you know, oh, you know, it's just bad to you right now, you know, but imagine what it was like in the 60s, and imagine what it was like in the 70s, imagine what it was like in the 50s and the 40s. Like, even then, just like you said before, then it took, you had to have a certain amount of resources to get into a studio and to put, you know, to buy studio time and fancy microphones and equipment and whatnot that you needed in order to get your message out. Here, you have access to all that technology. We're sitting in this great podcast studio here at Duke University. And, you know, there's a dearth. We don't have, you know, people speaking that truth. And I really do feel like it's tied to what you're saying. You know, people are trying to, you know, they want to be relevant, but they also want to be rich. Yeah. They want to, you know, they want that recognition, those likes, you know, that representation.
Right.
That's going to allow them to sell out stadiums and whatnot.
And in fairness, I mean, that backlash has always been there. I mean, Nina Simone was banned from radio, and mm-hmm. it was so bad. I mean, she fled the country. And mm-hmm. But that didn't dissuade other artists of the time from mm-hmm. writing, you know, very timely, you know, Neil Young writing Southern Man so quickly. Mm. After Kent State, no, it would have been Kent State, but sorry, you can edit this out.
I get where you're coming from, but then once again, that goes back to what we were talking about before in regard to, you know, a different time period where it's like, you know, something like a Kent State happens, or something like, you know, the you know, JFK assassination happens, or something happens, you know, to Martin Luther King, you know, the nation as a whole overwhelmingly is, like, you know, grieving together in solidarity. Right. And so it's easy to put out a song and say, you know what? You know, what happened to King was messed up. That shouldn't have happened. Right. And people will be like, yeah, resonate with that, connect with that, or whatever. Now it feels like, you know, something happened to, you know, Obama or whatever, I don't think you would have a song that would resonate with everybody.
No.
I think so. You might have some people making party songs about it, where you have other people who might be feeling that anguish. But that's the country that we live in now. And these are the divides that we have to, like, bridge. We have to cross.
Well, and you have, I mean, I know this isn't the topic of our show, but Kent State, I think it was, you know, 3 college students killed by National Guard. I mean, we have
Uvalde.
we have mass shootings mm-hmm. where citizens are killing others. We have police killing mm-hmm. Young black people mm-hmm. far more frequently. But it's the news cycle. It's like, we think about it for a couple of days, and then talk about the banality of evil. Mm-hmm. We've moved on. I mean, if would it be interesting to know if something like Kent State happened today, how long would that stick with us?
Wouldn't even make the news. Like, right. It was like only three people died.
Right, I've seen these stories about some young child being killed, and then they'll talk about this will be the turning point, and it never is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe it doesn't make sense to sing these protest songs now. I mean, how long are they? The news, I hate to keep saying it, but these news cycles only last so long. We constantly need something to get viewership and otherwise. And
churn.
Yeah, the churn.
Well, Chris, you said something earlier about fear being a thing that drives some of the musicians. Like, if we know what happened to some of the musicians who did create this type of music, right? We know what happened to activists. We have examples. We can see what happens to people who are not doing anything. There's a fear that if I'm an artist and I have a platform, can I say something that's going to keep me alive for 20 years? Or will I say something that I might not make it for 20 years?
Yeah.
So there's that, plus whoever is promoting the music, funding the music, you know, putting it out there, saying, do we want to represent somebody who might not make it, or somebody who's going to cause, you know, friction from our sponsors and our, and we see it in our work here. Like, there are certain things that we can't do or we don't do because we don't have donorship. We don't have, you know, the buy-in from leaders, or we don't have enough people saying, yes, we need that. Yes, we want that. And so in one mind, I'm thinking, we don't need any more protest music because it's already out there. We just need to replay it because it still applies. There's nothing that changed, right, other than the technology that gets it out there. But on the other hand, we need to share carriage. We need to show people that it is okay for you to say what you need to say. You need to speak it because there are still some people that need to hear, need to know these things are happening around us, and that because you speak it, because you hear it and act on it, that's where it changes. That's where we go further.
Yep, absolutely. And I totally agree about the, I was listening to Mississippi Goddamn, before I came over today. And again, aside from the poppy music in the background, the 50s type of sound, early 60s, I guess, you know, it's go slow. I mean, that repeating that, you know, don't, you know, we'll make change, but not too fast, in the way that Nina just keeps running with that, and everything that they suffer through, and, you know, slow's not good enough anymore. So I hadn't listened to that song in probably 10, 15 years. But going back to someone like Casey Anderson, who, you know, that one line hit me. So, I mean, if we can get more people out there recording, you know, what one line or two lines are going to resonate with someone and make a difference for them? Because sometimes, I mean, music ages. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd love to see a remake of Mississippi Goddamn in a much more aggressive type of way, mm-hmm. which may be sacrilegious, you know, to even suggest such a thing. But, you know, so I agree. I mean, you could certainly replay a lot of the songs from back in the 60s and 70s, and not enough has changed.
Yeah. I think what ends up happening is, you know, people start to wax nostalgic about that time period and think that, you know, okay, you know, Marvin Gaye came out with What's Going On, you know, back in, you know, 70-something, whatever. And then, you know, that becomes the soundtrack for that time period. And it gets locked in that space. And people can't recognize that what's old is new again and apply it to today. So you always have to have those new voices that are resonating. On top of that, too, it's just like, you know, I mean, just like we don't call upon our elders as much as we do our friends, you know, our people our age, you know, people within our social circle. Whenever we don't do that, whenever we don't interact with a constituency of people for whatever reason, because, you know, they're older, or they're gay, or they're Muslim, or whatever, you know, we don't hear the wisdom that's contained. So if I'm not listening to music from the 60s and 70s or whatever, I'm not listening. And then if somebody plays it for me, I'm still not listening, right? But if I'm hearing a song from some contemporary artist that I know and respect, that has the kind of clout or recognition that, you know, I acknowledge, then they could be singing that Nina Simone song, and now I hear it. Now it's been infused with this new, you know, energy that comes from my connection with that individual because it's a song,
right,
from somebody that I like.
Well, and we did this, I think, in our first episode, where also just listening to music made by someone with a very different background. Like, I find myself, I do find myself not listening to enough music sung by women.
Mm.
In fact, my buddy, when we make song lists, he's like, hey, you picked a song, you know. I have to get better about that. But I hadn't listened to rap. I know we're going to talk about that in our future episode. But, you know, how I evolved to what I took away from rap, it was very different, because early on I felt dangerous. You know, it's like, you know, the dangerous ones. It's like, because I was the only one of my buddies listening to it. So, and that was all about me, not about trying to learn more about what, you know, those artists are singing. So I hope that's one thing we can accomplish with this podcast, is continue to introduce each other to different songs. But like on that first episode, where we both looked at each other like, Run the Jewels. And it's like, you know, so we, someone that we both listened to.
I'm still waiting for the Tulip episode.
Yeah, exactly, the Tulip episode. So that's coming up, I think.
That's what's up. All right, our guests in the studio, our vocal one and our not so vocal one.
I was supposed to be quiet.
No, you guys gave me more than I anticipated, and so much more for me to work with. So that's good. No, I mean, I want to have y'all back in the studio again, especially as we talk about musical taste. It's always good to bring for somebody else to throw a playlist into the mix. So,
Oh yeah, I mean, so, I'd love to send them off for homework and come back with some songs, and maybe even unannounced, bring those to us so we can think about them as we play them.
We're exposing each other to new shit, and we want you to expose us to new stuff too.
Okay.
Oh, wait, I don't like that look.
That seems like she took that as a challenge.
That's like a threat.
You ready?
You just threatened me with a playlist.
With a playlist.
I agree with Brandon. This was nice. It's only our second episode that we recorded, but it's nice to have a little bit of change.
And energy.
Yeah, change in energy and some fantastic advice from both of our guests. So thank you.
Thank y'all for having us.
Thanks for doing it.
Appreciate y'all being here.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is big.
It is. This is big. It's big. It's going to be big.
Let's hope.
All right. Podcast out.
The audacity of this pitch.
Conversation does not have to stop here. Join us on diversifyit.duke.edu and join our listserv.